not prepare ahead of time and bookmark this, so please excuse me. And the bookmark is straight to where I need it to be, which I think is a sign from God I chose well. Reading for tonight is from Romans 8, verses 18 on. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for the adoption, the redemption of our bodies. For in hope we were saved. Now hope that is already seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Here ends the reading. For tonight, or at least advertised in the bulletin leading up to tonight, has been the topic of living well near the end. I will say I have learned a few things by being a hospice chaplain, a few things about what it means about life. A few things that I've learned include things like everyone falls in love at least once, and loving other people is almost always complicated and almost always rewarding. I have learned that it is far more common to have an addiction than it is to have $1 million. I have learned that everyone has a sense of humor. And it is also a rare person who doesn't want someone to sit next to them, hold their hand, and sing to them softly when they're not feeling well. I have learned that there is no life that is free from tragedy and hardship, that trauma and illness is in store for all of us. I have learned that denial is definitely a stage of the dying and grieving processes. And sometimes it is the only one people bother to experience because you can deny needing to go any further. I have learned that everyone has done some terrible things, and everyone has done some beautiful things, and everyone in one way or another has participated in the great events of history. I have learned that fear and doubt abound, and being a Christian is not a guarantee against having fear and doubt about death and God. Nor is being an atheist a guarantee for fearing the end. I have learned that death is a part of life, and as such has the possibility to be beautiful, even though it is fierce. The one thing I have not learned is the surefire way to live well as death draws near. I have not found the 5 steps to better dying or a standardized bucket list of things that each of us should get done. If there is some simple way to tell people how to live well at the end that will work for each of us, I have yet to be let in on the secret. So being stumped as I was, I went into a patient's room earlier this week and I asked her, being someone I considered to be going through this process well, I told her I'm supposed to preach on the topic of living well near the end. I didn't know what to say, and she said, "How is it any different than any other part of life?" Because yeah, how is it different? We are all dying. We don't want to admit it, and thanks to the wonders of modern medicine and modern sanitation and safety measures, there are many of us who have lived a long time before having to admit in any substantial and real way that we are in fact mortal. For the most part, we go through life with the assumption that mortality will kick in later on in life. And because we don't think about being mortal yet, we often postpone coming to grips with the most basic part of being human. We are going to die, and this colors everything that we do
and everything we experience. And we do all sorts of things to pretend like this is not an issue. Or even if we have that deep gnawing sense underneath our skin that death is an issue, we avoid it. We avoid it by chasing after fleeting pleasures, pursuing worldly dreams, hoarding money or possessions. We distract ourselves beyond any reason, that is any reason other than not wanting to sit down for more than 5 minutes in case we realize that we are temporary. And because we are temporary, in all the ways that we usually think of ourselves, we probably don't matter all that much. The more that we avoid the fact that we are mortal, though, the less we actually live. It doesn't matter if we're young, and it doesn't matter if we're old, it doesn't matter if we're beginning life or if we're at the end. If we pretend like we will continue on indefinitely and that we can have all the do-overs that we want, we will never really experience what it means to live. Because to live is to recognize that now matters, that the people around us are important, that we have the power to make things different, and we have very little control over the outcome of things. To live is to experience the paradox of just how small we are in the grand scheme of things and how important the little things are. We are living in the shadow of the cross. That is the theme for this series, and I gotta admit, I kinda like it. And we are living in the shadow of the cross, and not just when we go into the doctor's office for that visit, you know, the one where the doctor comes in, crosses his arms, stares at that space between our feet, and then he speaks the death sentence. We are living in the shadow of the cross, but not only for that brief second when we realize that car isn't stopping when it's supposed to. And we live in the shadow of the cross, but not just in the faded cognition that comes with dementia when we slowly forget that we once even knew anything at all. The truth is we live in the shadow of the cross every moment. Because we live in the shadow of the cross, because in one way or another, we will die, and somehow we know it. We don't know how, we don't know when. And I think what surprises me the most about God in this case is that God emptied himself to be born in the same shadow all humans have lived under since the Garden of Eden. Jesus lived without turning his path away from the inevitability. He did his ministry every moment, even though he saw how he was angering those in power. He spoke the truth to those who were plotting to kill him and did not alter his message for the sake of saving himself. I don't think I'm the only one at some point who has read the gospel story and wondered, Jesus, why didn't you just save yourself? In fact, I think the disciples said something like that. Jesus pleaded for the cup to be taken away from him, and yet he moved forward. He engaged in forgiveness for those who were killing him. And Jesus, even at the last moments, were paying attention to those he loved, his mother Mary, his beloved disciple. He made sure that they were taken care of up to his last breath. Now, if you want a model of how to live well at the end, Jesus provides a really good model of how to do so. But more than providing a model, Jesus Christ transforms the cross into a place of ultimate hope. The cross of Jesus is not just a reminder to make life precious and remember our mortality. It is that, though. The cross of Jesus is not just a simple reminder to behave ourselves, though it could definitely help when we come across temptation. The cross of Jesus Christ is certainly more than a symbol of membership to a particular community, though it is that too. The cross of Jesus Christ is the symbol of our greatest hope, that death, in fact, has been swallowed up. Death is still there, but death is a place where God meets us at our most human, most frail, weakest, and most despised place. And there, God transforms death into life and our mortal selves to be immortal. The place where we are most afraid to be is the place where God is most glorified in us. This is where God does the most magnificent work. To live in the shadow of the cross as we face our mortality is therefore also the place where we live with the greatest hope. Not the hopes necessarily of just getting a good grade in school or getting the attention of someone we like or a promotion or having well-behaved children or having a good health report from the doctor or even our sports team winning. All of those are good blessings on their own right, but the shadow of the cross is bigger than any one of those things. The shadow of the cross is the knowledge that in Jesus Christ and his work on the cross, that the worst that can happen to us, that is death, need not be a source of fear. And what seems to be the darkest place of life is in fact the place where God promises to bless us the most. And so whether we know we are nearing the end of life or if we're denying it as much as we possibly can, the promise is the same. In death, as in life, God has claimed us eternally as God's own. And so what does it mean to live well into that promise? Well, as I said, I still don't know for sure, but it certainly doesn't sound like something that's going to lead to a 5 steps to a better end of life. I don't think there's going to be any bestseller that quite captures it. Instead, to me, it sounds a lot like freedom. Amen.